On March 8, 1954, Carl Marion Fisher returned home from his job to find his door locked. He immediately grew concerned as his wife Constance frequently suffered from anxiety and depression. He contacted her physician Richard Chass, and when he arrived, the two men broke down the door. They would not be ready for what they saw. Welcome to History's Biggest Villains. Constance was born on May 26, 1929 in Oakland, Maine. After being abandoned by her biological parents, she was adopted by the Saroy family. Those who knew Constance while she was growing up said that she was a nice girl, although she was moody. In 1946, 17-year-old Constance married 24-year-old Carl Marion Fisher, a World War II veteran who worked at a car shop in the Maine Central Railroad. Shortly after their marriage, they moved to an apartment in Waterville, Maine. They would have three children: Richard in 1947, Daniel in 1948, and Deborah in 1953. After the children were born, Constance began to display signs of anxiety and depression, as she would constantly worry about her children, money, and the cramped apartment they lived in. She also attempted suicide on one occasion, but was unsuccessful. On March 8, 1954, Carl returned home from work to find the front door locked. Sensing something suspicious, he called Dr. Richard Chass, who was treating his wife for her postpartum depression. When he arrived, the two men broke down the door. Carl went to the bedroom and found the dead bodies of Daniel and Deborah tucked in their beds, almost looking asleep. When Carl ran to the bathroom, he found his oldest son, Richard, drowned in the bathtub. His wife, Constance, was missing. Carl quickly called the police, and when they searched the home, they found Constance unconscious, wrapped in an electric blanket under a bed. She had attempted to commit suicide by drinking a bottle of liquid shampoo. She had written a suicide note saying that she had drowned the children to save them from evil and that God told her to do it. It was later determined that as she grabbed Richard's neck to push his head under the water, the struggle was so intense that she had to climb in the tub to finish him off. Constance was taken to the hospital where she recovered. Afterwards, she was arrested and charged with murder. Those in her community were shocked, as they couldn't believe she was capable of murder. However, a pre-trial forensic psychiatric examination determined that she was suffering from paranoid schizophrenia. She was then declared unfit to stand trial. Constance was sent to the Augusta State Hospital for treatment. Her diagnosis changed over the years from paranoid schizophrenia to postpartum psychosis to sociopathy to dissociative disorder, where she stood outside herself and watched as she killed her children. One thing bothered her doctors, though. She never showed remorse for what she'd done. Instead, she said the children were better off because she couldn't care for them properly and now they were in heaven. A voice, a presence, kept telling her that, she said. Aside from the therapies, life at Augusta resembled a summer camp, with ballet classes, softball teams, and dramatic performances. The cures provided at the hospital, which included high doses of hormones and insulin shock therapy, seemed to work for Constance, although she would have seizures from time to time. After a year in the hospital, she showed signs of improvement, saying that she no longer heard the voices or had any hallucinations. She was also more calm and pleasant to the psychiatrist, staff, and other patients. In 1955, her husband Carl started the legal process to have her released, but the medical board at the hospital denied his request at first. By 1958, her doctors had to admit that she had shown no signs of psychosis for years and that it might be safe to release her. In 1959, the country was in the midst of an effort to deinstitutionalize mental patients, so Constance was released into her husband's custody on March 6th, only 5 years after she murdered their three children. All I gotta say is, Carl, you're a better man than me. Carl had built a new home for her in Fairfield. The couple would go on to have three more children: Kathleen in 1960, Michael in 1962, and Natalie in 1965. For the first few years, she cheerfully fell back into the role of wife and mother. Then, after Natalie's birth, she started to unravel, being crippled by sadness and worries. She began to hear voices talking about the end of the world. On June 30th, 1966, Carl returned home from work to find 9-month-old Natalie face down in the bathtub. He ran out of the house and contacted the police on a neighbor's phone. Along with the police, Joe Brannigan, a local priest, went into the home. He saw Natalie, whom he had baptized 9 months earlier, dead in the bathtub. The bodies of Kathleen and Michael, also drowned, were found tucked into their beds. Constance was found lying in her bed, alive but unconscious from a pill overdose. I hope you understand, she wrote in a suicide note to Carl. It's the only way I could be sure they would go to heaven. This situation was almost identical to the first incident, with the newspapers calling it a duplication of tragedy. After she recovered in the hospital, she was sent to Kennebec County to be tried for murder. Following her arraignment, she was being held without bail. Attorney General Richard DeBord announced that the state would not request that Constance undergo psychiatric treatment. During a formal hearing, psychiatrist Price Kirkpatrick believed that Constance suffered from bouts of depression because she wasn't taking her medication properly. After a day of testimonies from the prosecution and the defense, the court ordered that Constance must undergo a psychiatric examination to determine how competent she was to stand trial. The results of the examinations concluded that she was fit to stand trial, and Constance was soon charged with the murders of Kathleen, Michael, and Natalie. Despite this, she entered a plea of not guilty by reason of insanity. The prosecution questioned Albert Dross of the Warnerville Police Department and Dr. Joseph Heibel of the Thayer Hospital, where Constance was sent after the second incident. Heibel claimed that Constance gave clear and cohesive answers to his questions, and Dross said the same. He also added that he found a kitchen knife and a pellet gun in the house that Constance planned to kill herself with. Despite these claims, her defense counsel convinced the court that she was insane, with the judge sentencing her to permanent confinement in the Augusta State Hospital. This time, Constance knew she was in the state hospital for good. Her condition worsened, and she spent most of her time watching television and mumbling to herself. She didn't mingle with other patients as she had before. On October 1st, 1973, Carl, who had been extremely faithful to Constance up to this point, decided to stop visiting her as it caused him too much grief. He murdered six of his children. How do you think he's gonna feel? Soon after, Constance managed to escape from the hospital, prompting a search by hospital staff and local authorities. 8 days later, on October 9th, a group of duck hunters spotted the bloated body of a woman floating in the Kennebec River near Gardner. An autopsy determined that this was Constance Fisher, and her death was listed as an accidental drowning. Constance's body was later buried at the family's graveyard plot at Waterville, along with her six children. After Carl found out about his wife's death, he became extremely reclusive. When he died of a heart condition in 1990, he was buried in the same plot as his wife and children. This case really kind of kills me, because how do you kill six of your children and serve no time? I don't understand how you find somebody not mentally, what? So you're telling me that this woman had a psychotic episode and drowned three of her children, went to a mental institution, then 12 years later did the exact same thing, and now you're saying, well, there has to be something wrong with her. There has to be, she has to have mental issues. I feel like that's deliberate. You're writing suicide notes. You're deliberately trying to do this. I feel like when you write a suicide note, that means you're deliberately doing this. She was probably mad that she didn't die the first time, because there's no way you do that and then you do the exact same thing again. And it's like the same exact reason, the same exact thing. It's too much. And it's just like, Carl is a better man than me, because she killed three of your children and you get back with her. Then you have three more children and she kills those children too. And you are still visiting her in jail after this? I don't know, man. I couldn't do it. I'm sorry. I couldn't do it. You kill my children and you want me to, and I'm still visiting you in prison? No. I don't know, man. It seems like this case isn't really talked about that much. And I think the reason why she committed suicide by throwing herself in the water, she probably felt all the guilt, and she knew that nobody was going to see her. Nobody was coming to see her ever again. Like, you're going to be in the hospital your whole entire life by yourself. Like, she knew. I feel like she committed suicide. I know she did. I hope you enjoyed this story. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate all you guys for the support on this channel. Leave a like if you enjoyed. Hit that subscribe button if you're new. Turn on my post notifications. Check out my podcast, my audio-only podcast. The link to that will be in the description. But thank you. Please be safe. I'm out. Peace.